Oh my god. Oh, that was the scariest thing in the world, and it all went wrong.
Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, what on earth was happening there? Well, let me tell you, that was just a snippet of me just at the moment my parachute opened, after having jumped from a plane 2 miles in the air and having been in freefall for 40 seconds. Now, why would I do such a thing? Let's begin at the beginning. When I was a child, maybe 6 or 7 years old, my Aunt Jane was put in a wheelchair for the first time. I couldn't understand it. Why was she in a wheelchair? She hadn't had an accident. Jane was suffering with multiple sclerosis, or MS as it's commonly known, a disease that attacks the central nervous system. She was particularly unfortunate in that she had primary progressive MS, the most severe form of the disease, relatively unusual in somebody of her young age. Jane passed away when I was 10 years old, the disease having consumed her. I remember the last time I saw her and how frail she looked. My family had visited her in hospital, and there she laid on the bed, unable to move. She couldn't talk, and the only way she could communicate was through blinking. One blink for yes, 2 blinks for no. Sounds like something from a sad movie, but no movie could portray how it felt to see her like that. Today, MS is still a battle in the family. Ian, my uncle, and Jane's brother, has suffered with the disease for the last 15 years. Fortunately, his is not as progressive as Jane's, and though he can't work anymore, we are thankful that he still has the use of his legs. But Ian is not alone. Across the UK, there are over 85,000 people who suffer with MS. It is for these people that I jumped from that plane. I've raised over £500 for the MS Society, using my good health and physical ability to help those less fortunate.
You two guys, totally relax. Michelle, let's run through it.
Yep.
Head in.
Head in.
LT.
LT.
X thousand feet. Okay.
X thousand feet.
Okay. Now it's...
Practice pulls.
And it's arch.
Arch. And locate.
Here it is. And recover.
Recover.
Good. Arch.
Arch. Sorry.
Locate. Keep it separate.
Recover.
And then arch.
Arch.
And locate.
Locate.
And recover.
Recover.
Good. And then look at the hands position. That's still good. All right. And now for here, so free time.
Free time.
Head in.
Head in.
Altie.
Altie.
You're at 7,000 feet. Head in.
Head in.
Altie.
Altie.
You're at 6,000 feet.
Lock on.
Five.
Five.
Now arch.
Arch. Locate.
And
pull.
1,000,
2,000, 3,000, 4,000, check canopy.
Good. Every day you wake up and think, okay, it's okay now, but then you get to walk, go to the toilet, whatever, and you find your legs a bit funny, you know. It's freedom that's gone, isn't it? I find it's something that's been taken away all the time. I can't do the things I used to. Yes, I can cycle okay, but I can't walk and that's a trouble. If you want to do something like sunny day outside, I want to go out or something, like my little daughter, for argument's sake, can't walk around the block with her because it hurts. And she goes, Dad, what's that? And it hurts, mate, it hurts in the heart, if that makes any sense.
I've had MS 17 years now, but I've only been in a wheelchair about 7 out of those 17. So I've been very lucky, really. You know, I did have that time when I was still, you know, able to do quite a bit. And because it happened very gradually, I've been able to adjust to it, and my family has been able to adjust. With each time, it has progressed, you know. But it's just wondering where it's all going to end, really, now.
I was known as the, oh dear, relapse remission stage I had in those days, and in fact I went at least 3 or 4 years with no deterioration in my mobility, and to such an extent that I then started querying what the doctors had told me about disseminated sclerosis or multiple sclerosis. And I thought, no, you know, I was feeling so well and I was getting back to doing sport again, and I honestly thought the doctors had got it all wrong. And then one morning I woke up and it sort of tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Morning, Alan, I'm back." Since then, I've suffered years of relapse remission MS, but I suppose the last 10 years I've had the steadily progressive worsening of MS. Prior to that, it was all the relapse remission. And I used to, you know, it used to be quite extreme, the relapse remissions. I mean, one month I'd be fine, not running, but enjoying life with apparent no symptoms of MS. And then suddenly I'd crash down and I'd end up 2 or 3 months on my back, you know, either in hospital or at home.
It started with me when I was about, I suppose I was about 16, and I thought, why can't I feel my little finger? My little finger was all numb and pins and needles and burning and throbbing. In London, I went to the doctors. As I got older, I was married, and it was, well, go home and have 2 or 3 babies and take your mind off yourself. Forget, you know, forget. Neurotic, in other words, you know, calling me and people like me. But I can assure you, my dear, I am not neurotic. No way. No way. I knew what I was feeling, but nobody else did. And over the period of years, I had gone to doctors and I had complained about different things, numbness, feeling of trembling, and generally poorly. And I had gone for many, many, many years to try and find out in London what was wrong with me. However, until I came here to Dorset, to Bournemouth, I was diagnosed, I would say, around about, I can't really remember, but I think it was late 80s.
Basically, we've gone from an upright position to then a face-to-earth position. Why were you doing that bit? The brain can't work it out. What's going on? And what tends to do is it tends to turn you into football players and you start kicking and thrashing like mad. Okay, which then just causes all kinds of problems. All right, so we've got to try and keep control of our legs. It's understandable, but then once you settle down, once you arch your back, then the brain starts to relax a bit and tells you, eh, it's not so bad, you know, this is quite cool actually, because 35, 40 seconds doesn't sound a lot of time, but then actually it's a ton of time, bearing in mind what you're actually doing. You're falling through the air at 120 miles an hour. So 40 seconds, I mean, it goes fairly quick, but it's plenty of time in what we need to do. But the thing is, when we leave the plane, we settle down. Once we settle down, then you start to relax a bit because, you know, you start to realise this isn't too bad, you know.
MS has always been a relatively mysterious disease. Scientists are still unsure of exactly what causes it, but progress has been made, and today we understand more clearly exactly how the disease functions. The MS Society National Centre in London is where the charity coordinate their numerous research projects into finding the causes, treatments, and hopefully one day, a cure for MS. I visited the centre and spoke to Matthew Trainer, the communications manager, in order to find out a little bit more about this elusive disease.
MS is multiple sclerosis, which means literally many scars. Sclerosis is a Greek word for scars. And it's a disease of the central nervous system. If you think of the brain and your limbs, you have the central nervous system taking messages from the brain to the limbs. And if you imagine an electrical wire, there's a protection around that wire that makes sure those signals can get through properly. In MS, the body's own immune system that usually attacks external, you know, diseases that come into the body, it starts attacking that wire, if you like, and damaging it. So you get these scleroses or scars on it. And when that happens, as with an electrical wire, when the coating is disrupted, the signal doesn't get through clearly. So in practical terms, that means you might lose some of your mobility because you'll think, I want to move my hand, and the impulse isn't getting through because the nervous system's damaged. It might lead to loss of sight, temporary loss of vision. It can cause cognitive problems with memory, depression. It can cause incontinence, sexual dysfunction. Now, because of the way the disease works, initially people tend to have relapses where they have an attack and their symptoms will get worse. You might wake up one morning and suddenly, you know, you can't move your left leg or you've lost some of your vision. But initially that tends to go into remission. And this is the most common initial form of MS. So people will have a relapse and they'll suddenly become very ill but gradually get better. But as the disease progresses, people tend to find that the disability reaches a certain point and starts progressing from there on. But that is later on in life. So MS doesn't kill people. And it does in very, very, very few cases. But what it does do is it does have a very significant effect on quality of life.
Okay, this time we're going to do it all the way through, saying it and doing it at the same time. Look, locate, peel, punch, pull, hard arch. Okay, so do much. Stabilis preposition, all the way through now. Okay, you've got a malfunction, so let go and go for it.
Look, locate, peel, punch, pull, hard arch.
Good, doing back up.
It's a nasty old terrible thing. It really, really is. And it's quiet and it creeps up on you. And many, many times I've woken up in the morning and I've thought, oh my goodness, what next? You know, what's coming today? But you've just got to go through the day. You've just got to live today and then tomorrow comes and you think, thank God, you know, everything's okay. But when something hits you, for example, lots of us here do have nasty water infections and things, and that's terrible. That really is terrible. And unfortunately, whatever they give me for it is worse than the actual condition itself. But I have to go through it to get rid of the infection. And I think you speak to anybody else out there, they might say to you, oh no, I'm fine, I'm all right, don't even know I've taken it. Don't know. I suppose you're a little bit more susceptible perhaps than anybody else. But if you're lumbered, love, you're lumbered, aren't you? And that's it, you've just got to make the best of what you've got and how you live.
In my day-to-day life, I've only got one good arm now, totally wheelchair-bound, so it's affecting me to the point where I can't do anything. Obviously can't drive, can't work. Thankfully, my children have both grown up now, so they don't need me physically, but I am still there emotionally and mentally. I am fine, I can talk. That's the only thing I've got now, is that I can talk and listen and be there for people.
There is also the manic depression, which is another side issue of MS, in so much that manic depression is something, is an imbalance of juices or fluids within the brain. Like I said, at the time, it was all new to me, this side of things, to such an extent that when it coincided with a hospital stay, where I had to go and see Professor Webb, my neurologist, and I remember him sort of looking at me and saying, well, Alan, what can I do for you? And I promptly told him, I said, I'm in a job that I love, I'm living with a girl that I love, why do I want to top myself?
When it comes to getting down to it, it's awkward, shall we say, yeah, because there's times when it's really good and sometimes it's not really good, but it hurts. When you orgasm, sorry, it's like that affects your whole body, yeah, and it affects everything about you. It's like, I'm trying to put this right, it affects your whole body without a doubt, every bit of your nerves, it goes, and of course MS is like nerves, isn't it? But it's time you can do it, and it's like a nightmare, it's one word for it. And it makes my big toe want to blow off, for argument's sake, and that hurts. And that's hard to get through to other people, isn't it? You explain to some young ladies, not all, but some young ladies, and they don't like it at all, because when they realise what's happening, they tend to, like, it's dumpy is the right word. You know? Yeah, dumpy, I suppose. Because they understand that it's great. Great, the time goes on, but then they say bye then when things don't go wrong.
So like I say, on looking up, is it big, is it square, is it undamaged, and is it controllable? If you're not happy with any of those, as in the answer's no, then you would have to look at getting rid of it and getting on your reserve. But if you've reached up and grabbed all your steering toggles, I cannot stress enough, you must get them off your hands before you carry out your reserve drawers.
One of the things that has been difficult in developing treatments for MS is its diversity. It's most commonly diagnosed in 20 to 40-year-olds, and women are almost twice as likely than men to develop it. Once diagnosed, the disease is with you for life. However, the way the disease acts will be different for each and every person. Across the UK, the MS Society have local branches, which can help those with MS deal with their problems on a personal level. I visited my local branch, the Osborne Day Centre in Bournemouth, and chatted to some of the members about their experiences.
I'd be lost without it, because I'd be stuck at home all on my own. At least when I can come here, I meet people in a similar situation. Not that we dwell on MS at all, but it's nice to be able to talk. We have a laugh. I've got some wonderful friends here now who understand. If I'm not feeling very well, they understand. And vice versa, if they're not feeling very well, I can understand how they're feeling. If we've got any problems, then there's people here you can ask for advice, and professionals, you know, nurses and physiotherapists and people there who are there to help you.
I'd heard of the MS Centre here at West Parley through either friends or through an MS magazine. So, of course, when we finally moved down here, which we had to because I had to have a bungalow, because where we were living back in Sutton, Surrey, it was a semi-detached house, and I then couldn't manage the stairs at all. We always wanted to settle in Dorset, and just that move just came a bit earlier than we suspected because of my health. So we came down here, discovered that West Parley Centre was only 15 minutes away in the car, and started attending here. I find it across the land is rather unique, this day centre, in so much that what it can offer you, its amenities, etc. It's like I say, I think for a big majority of MS people that come here, they can't do without it.
Oh, it's so helpful. I mean, you talk to other people and listen to their problem, and your problem don't feel half as bad. You think, what are you moaning about, you know? It's different. I mean, I've been coming to the centre for years and years. I mean, it's like my second home. I love it to bits. It takes me out of myself. I don't feel self-inflicted. I feel at home when I'm here. You know, even if I don't do this, don't do it, but I've met people and they all know me, you know. I mean, I'm quite well known in the centre, because I've been coming here for so long.
The thing is, my dear, you are unfortunate, you're lumbered with this problem, and there's nothing you can do about it. So you can't go around crying, you can't be miserable, and you can't be unhappy. This is why a place like this is so fabulous for us, because we all know we're all very similar. We've all got the same name, but we're different. But I know if I go up to Mary or Joe or George, or I know they've got the same as what I have, and they know what I'm talking about. Whereas when you're a normal, healthy person, you couldn't expect them to understand what you're talking about. You know, you just couldn't expect. It affects you in every possible way.
My name is Rod Stipp. I'm the chairman here. The centre is based in West Parley, which is near Bournemouth Airport. We are probably one of the largest branches in the country, of which there are 350. The centre here is one of six day centres only in the whole country. And this one, again, is probably one of the biggest. We have a membership of over 200. For those that come into the centre, of those 200 plus, we probably see about 50 per day on the 3 days we're open. Some would come in for the complete day, so they'll come in here from 10 till 3. Others will come in here just for physio. There's a core group of maybe about 20 that will come in here for physio starting at 9. So they would come in here for an hour, do their physio exercises, socialize with a cup of tea, cup of coffee, and then disappear and do whatever they want to do. A number of them will be involved with some of the other activities that are available for disabled people, like sailing, water skiing, horse riding. They will try all of these things, anything to try and keep active for as long as they possibly can. So the facilities that are in this area are pretty good, generally, for disabled people, but there's still a lot more that can be done.
Just like to say, this centre is wonderful. The volunteers we get are exceptional. We could do with some more volunteers. We're always desperate for people to come and help. It's a lovely atmosphere here, very friendly. And I certainly, and I know a lot of us, would be very lost without this centre. It is a lifeline to us.
The thing that struck me most about the Osborne Day Centre was the fantastic resilience of the people I met there. Their ability to smile and laugh had not been lost, and I was truly made to feel welcome. I can only hope that this programme might inspire others to help the Multiple Sclerosis Society, whether or not they decide to keep their feet on the ground. The Society are looking to the future and finding ways to make the lives of people with MS more bearable, and even if only in a small way, I am very glad to have been a part of it.
We're going to do a quick exit. Just check in, check out. Up, out.
In. Arch.
The last few years have been very positive in terms of the development of new research into MS. We're still probably realistically a long way from a cure for it. It's a very complex disease, but we are getting treatments that can make it more bearable. There's a couple of drugs coming to market at the minute that do appear able to stop the progression of disability. And the real hope is to try and come up with a cure for, I talked earlier about wires and the coating on the wires. This is called myelin in the central nervous system. The real aim is to try and figure out how to stop damage to myelin, how to help it repair itself so you keep that protective coating. And there's some really positive work being done there, and we've set up a MS Society Centre for Myelin Repair at Cambridge. So there's work going on in research that's good. But people with MS have kept telling the Society, hang on, that's all great, but you know, some of that's 5-10 years off and I want help now. So we're also looking at better treatments for symptoms. We're invested in that to try and deal with pain and fatigue, which do make day-to-day life pretty unbearable for a lot of people with MS. We're also working to try and put more MS nurses out there. They're a great practical help to people with MS. A lot of people have their nurse's phone number on their mobile and can ring them up and say, I'm feeling a bit down, what do I do, you know, or I'm getting trouble at work. They're a great resource. So really what we're looking forward to is getting ourselves fit for purpose so we can keep making a difference to people's lives with MS. And just really bringing those people into focus. We've always talked a lot about the disease and its mechanics, but I think for the next few years, it's really about bringing people with MS right back into the centre and keep them as a focus of everything we're doing. And we're making big strides in that at the minute. And I think looking forward, that's what it's about. It's about the people. They're the ones who make the society, and they're the ones who are our focus as we move forward.
Okay, you've heard about why I want to do it. You've met the people I want to do it for. Well, there's only one thing left for it now. I've got to go and do it. What you're about to hear are the highlights of my slow drift down to earth beneath my parachute after the initial terror of 30 seconds of free fall.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh, that was the scariest thing in the world, and it all went wrong. Well, let me take a second to describe what just happened. Basically, I jumped out the plane, and I was flipped up over onto my back, and I managed to flip back over, and I tried to maintain my position, but I just somehow couldn't get it. And so they actually had to let me go and deploy the parachute for me, which is quite embarrassing. I'm just under 4,000 feet now. I'm just floating around what they call it the playground. It's basically a section of the airfield where I can float around until I come back down to 1,000 feet, and I've got to make all my landing moves. Below me I can see the airfield ahead to my left, and to the right of that, probably about a mile away, are a big load of some lakes and typical English patchwork fields. I'm in Cirencester, by the way. So I can see right over the Gloucestershire countryside. It's beautiful.
So that was it. Even thinking back on it now, I can't quite believe I've done it. After I had time to recover, I caught up with my skydiving instructor to get his take on how things went.
We exited the plane and we jumped from about 12,000 feet. We free-falled for about 40 seconds and you achieved the aim, really. I mean, sometimes the exit goes a bit weird, as in, if the person's not quite arching their back enough, then, things settle down once the instructors reorientate you and you have got a person either side sort of steadying you, as it were. So it's no big deal, because nothing can hurt you in free fall. You know, there's nothing to worry about up there. It's just a case of arching your back, you know, and obviously you landed middle of the airfield, so very pleased with it. Well done for doing the skydive, because many, many people do tandem skydives, which is obviously jumping with another instructor, and very few, I mean, less than sort of 5% of all people who jump actually do it by themselves. And even fewer of that do the old AFF jump as well. So very well done for taking it on and doing it, because obviously not that many people have got the bottle to do it.
Though it is safe to say that for any future fundraising initiatives I undertake, I'll be keeping my feet firmly on the ground, I'm so pleased that I've pushed myself to do this. If somebody were to have told me a few months ago that I'd be doing a free fall parachute jump, I'd have probably have laughed and told them they were crazy. The thing that really kept me going throughout the whole experience was the knowledge that the money I raised in sponsorship was going to such a fantastic cause. The Multiple Sclerosis Society are always looking for people to help out, whether it be through activities like mine where you fall from the sky, whether you decide to help at your local branch, or you get involved with the Research Your Health project. If you have a skill or a talent or just a desire to help, please really do get involved, because you can make a difference. If by doing my parachute jump I've helped but one person with MS, then I can genuinely say it was worth it, and I can only hope that if my Aunt Jane were here today, she'd be proud of me.